From Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to the Flat Picking Pilgrim's Progress. I'm your host, Gary Furr, and I'm so glad to have you with me today. Whether you're sitting in your favorite chair or riding along in the car, I'm glad we're going to get to spend this time together. Welcome, and as we do now and then, it's time for one of my stories from Mount Nebo. Let me tell you a little more about this place that I keep talking about. Some say Mount Nebo doesn't even exist, but I say it does. And anyway, just about everything BC, that means before COVID, and everything that happened before you came along, it's kind of hard to remember and take seriously. It's as though it never really happened because you weren't there to see it, or that you don't remember it. And that's why I tell these stories, because, well, future generations will need to know about what used to be, at least as we remember it. The world did used to be different than it is now. Phones were stuck to the wall. Some people had microwaves, and most of us didn't. And there still weren't all that many television channels. And since people couldn't carry their phones around with them, they had to actually look where they were walking most of the time and say hello to one another. People did talk to each other a lot more back then. So I guess that's why I want you, who are coming along after this, to know about it. There are a lot of things that weren't so great. And we're still fighting to try to make some of the worst things better. But just like everything now isn't all bad, everything then wasn't all good. It was the same as things have always been. This mixture of good and evil, of progressive folks trying to improve things, and those laggards clutching onto the past like so much nonsense you hear people talk about now. People wanting to go back to something that never really was. Nobody who ever picked cotton or plowed behind a mule's rear end or sat on an outhouse lid on a cold winter's night has any interest in going back to those days that we call the past. The good old days were old, all right, but they weren't all that good. But there were always things in every time that were worth it, like family and friends and books and ideas. There were things that brought pleasure and things that brought pain. People then were pretty much like people now, doing what was available to them to do, making choices. Except for the people that controlled everything, who pretty well dealt misery as they always have. And living under them was always pretty miserable, like it is now, too. No, back then, most of us just lived in our little piece of the world. And if you're as young as the young preacher I'm going to tell you about when he was starting out his career, well, you were just getting going. You thought the whole world was opening to you and you could make it what it needed to be. His name was John Astor. And he was married to a lovely lady by the name of Linda. And they had two little ones when he came to be the pastor of the little Mount Nebo church. And I'll tell you about some friends he made there, in particular one. He thought he was just going to be passing through that place, but one man in particular, a man named Mayford, became a friend. Well, the kind of friend that changes your life. Someone who's as much a part of your education as graduate school or your own sense of calling or importance or doing good in the world. So they arrived at that little church in their very used car in the year of 1979. But maybe I need to tell you a little bit about the man himself, John. He barely qualified to look like a preacher standing in a pulpit. He was still so young-looking that he could skip shaving a couple of days and get by with it. He was skinny and lean, which, as you know, time takes care of, and gravity too. Today, people can learn these things through a study of their history called genealogy or on websites. Usually, you're a lot older before you get interested in who you used to be and where you came from, and then you study it and you learn so much about it that you talk to anyone who will listen, which means that no one other than the people who are also interested in it really want to hear about it. And one day, John would look back and learn his own story. Got on Ancestry.com or something like that, or started going to courthouses to look up documents. But his roots came from that very North Carolina. He'd lived in a lot of other places most of his growing up years. And when he was growing up, he was pretty well determined he would never go back down to the South again. Never wanted to be around all that painful racist history and the craziness he saw sometimes in his extended family when they went back to visit. And now, on this day, when he went to meet with a committee to see about becoming the pastor of that little church, he found himself right back there again, where parents grew up and grandparents and those before them, and going to the seminary not too far from there, about to become the pastor of a little church in a small town that wasn't even on the map. His full name was John Jacob Jackson Astor. He possessed a very famous name for someone from such a modest history as his. He had a little idea that his name would be a bad fit for being a Baptist minister. People called you a lot of different things when you're a reverend, preacher, reverend, rev, if they didn't go to church or wanted to keep you at a distance, or pastor, which potentially made him Pastor Astor, which wasn't that great. The fame of his name was lost to him as a boy. Growing up southern and insignificant in western North Carolina, his father started out as a common carpenter, but somebody spotted some leadership qualities and took him out of the fixture shop and into management training. His father worked his way quickly up the company ladder from assistant to manager, and ambitious for a better life, he started reading books on the robber barons and business management. So when his first boy came along, he naturally wanted to give him a great name, and he named him John Jacob for good measure, adding Jack, which matched him up perfectly with the wealthy Astor, who was one of the robber barons. His father was proud of that last name connection with one of the great entrepreneurs of American lore. He left the quotation marks out of his nickname, of course, and John felt uncomfortable carrying around one of the most famous last names in American business history because his family had no real connection to the famous John J. Astor, the first multimillionaire in American lore who went to a watery grave on the Titanic. That John J. Astor in his 40s was worth $80 million, all of which he left for the ruination of the generations after him. Young John's family, on the other hand, as best he could tell, were just average people who worked hard, came to Georgia originally from debtors' prisons in England, and their name was something else that nobody's quite been able to dig up. They thought it was the name Astard, A-S-T-A-R-D. So Astor was shortened from either McMaster or Hester or Astard. But they decided at a reunion they must have been originally Irish and on the lam from the sheriff when they came over. His Uncle Henry, though, had another story. He'd done some genealogical society work, and that they'd lost that name after they left the boat, and their great-great-grandfather was dubbed a pretty bad nickname. They just put Bastard for the last name. It must have been a British official. There was no truth to the accusation. But new immigrants already were running from the bank and the king and too scared to push the issue if you were a working person. So B. Astor entered the American life on a birth certificate in the 18th century. In time, they quietly dropped the D and respelled it as Aster, mostly to put an end to the merciless beatings at school and the bullying that came with it. John didn't really know anything about his heritage, but many Southerners like him preferred to forget the past. Genealogy was the hobby of the mill owners and the merchants and bankers among the townsfolk up at the nice churches. When you're prosperous and you don't work with your hands, you've got time to connect your family to kings and dukes and earls and famous warriors. But regular folk like the Astors felt, as many among the tenant farmers and laboring classes, that it was the future, not the past, that was most important. And the sooner the better. The past was something to forget, full of shame and drunks and ne'er-do-wells and shady women. When you drag debts and prison and hangings and riding rails out of town with tar and feathers around with you, well, it's best to move on. So they settled in North Carolina after being chased out of a small town full of money they still owed down in Georgia and started over. And for four generations, they farmed and ran stores, went in the army and wove cotton in the mills. They eked out livings and bought things for themselves and got by. World War II ended the world that held them fast, and they started accumulating some things like wringer washing machines and cars. They started wanting more for their children. So, insecure, not well-heeled or connected, John was a book-smart boy, and his daddy was determined that he was going to have a better life. And he became the first college graduate in his family, and the first one who said he was going to be a minister, ever. Uncle Henry said, "Preacher, son, your kinfolk were running from preachers and bill collectors and immigration officials and the law." So it was ironic that in the end, John became a minister, a protector of the status quo, defender of tradition and values less than 20 miles from the town where his father had been born and from which he had gladly fled. But that's how it works in the South. Few people own everything. The rest keep moving, sometimes trying to move away, and you tend to come back like a bad penny. Well, his daddy, Bud Aster, wanted out of the South, and so when he was barely five, he finagled a transfer, and they'd lived in Kentucky and Ohio and other Midwestern states. And during his teens, John found himself getting serious about divine things, following Jesus and responding to opportunities to lead in the church, and eventually having a call to ministry, although he still wasn't very clear about what it meant. Something stirred inside him, and one Sunday morning, he came and told his church that he was answering a call, which meant he felt like God was asking him to do something. And so, as was typical in that church, he was encouraged to go to college and then to seminary, and there he went, and he met his wife. And that is, in the strangeness that is religion, how he came to meet with that committee for the possibility of becoming the pastor of that little church that day. The seminary that he had chosen happened to be in North Carolina, so when the second child had come along, he needed a church to pay bills. It seemed a little early to him. What did he know? But he submitted his name to the director of the Extension Service when he saw the notice on the bulletin board for someone to be a preacher in a little church. So here he was, back in a place he said he'd never live again, in the state where he'd been born, doing something he never imagined he'd do, among people he wouldn't have picked out to live with in a million years. But that isn't so unusual, I'd say. The truth is, most of us get the cards dealt to us for us. We make all kinds of pronouncements about what we're going to do or what we'll never do, but people who leave home swearing they'll never be back one day get a phone call, and there they are, sitting next to a parent about to die while they pick up the pieces. And that's okay, too. Like I said, not everything was wonderful back then, but there was beauty and joy and meaning. We burn up the past like straw these days and live mostly virtual lives. Think about that. A virtual life doesn't make anything, doesn't talk to a real human face, doesn't create valuable artifacts to say we were here, doesn't even leave that many memories of being fully present to anything. We just stare at screens a lot, while time is slipping through our hands anyway, just like the old days. It's good to remember. Not the good old days remembering, but truthful recollection. Reflect on it. That life for them was hard as life for you is hard now. Ponder the mystery that we were once born somewhere, came from somebody, and lived on one path. The only one that you get. And that's why I tell stories and remember. To pull up what's worth laughing at and remembering and passing on. And many years later, when John and Linda Astor would look back at that little town and that country church, they would feel differently. They felt something else. Gratitude. And not the mawkish caricature of thankfulness that infects our culture these days out of hate for the present. It was genuine appreciation for people and kindnesses without which they would have never made it. And they would laugh at some of the bizarre, occasionally weird, even a little mean people sprinkled along that way. Neither of them had ever seen anything quite like the cast of characters that inhabited this strange place to which they were about to go. And so, my loved ones, don't ever be ashamed of where you came from. It's not something any of us get to say much about. We either accept it or spend our life trying to pretend it never happened. And that is a deadly and ultimately fatal flaw. It can loose demons to travel through the desert looking for a soul to inhabit. And if we're not careful, they'll circle right back and possess us once more. So when you look back, accept yourself, where you came from. You don't have to make the whole world go back with you. Just know and make peace with it, and let it go so you can move on. But that's premature. John would get there one day, but when he met with that committee that day, he was just at the beginning of that journey in which he thought he was coming to help these people get better, never knowing that being with them was part of his own journey to be who he was. See you next time.
I'm Gary Furr, and this is the Flat Picking Pilgrim's Progress. Thanks for joining me today. You can find my music at gafurr.com, and you can go to my blog site for lots of other information and writings at garyfurr.me, garyfurr.me. Once again, thank you so much. Join me next time on the Flat Picking Pilgrim's Progress.